A Brief History of the Braille Monitor by Gary Wunder. There is a photo on the page, the caption, Gary Wunder. From the editor, I delivered the following speech on October 30, 2010 at the convention of the National Federation of the Blind of Colorado. I did not believe that we should include it in the monitor, but Barbara Pierce assured me that our readers would find it interesting. In the hope that she knows what she is talking about, here it is.
Well, you know, when President Maurer announced that I was taking over as editor of the Braille Monitor, a number of people came to offer congratulations, articles, and to find out what changes I envisioned in our magazine. This started me thinking that perhaps change was what was expected. So I began looking for new and untried ideas to use. People are always saying that they don't understand statistics. And so when I came across a statistic I hadn't heard before, courtesy of Garrick Scott, I thought this might be my first big break to make an impression as the editor. So what was the statistic? It was this. Try not to miss it now. 1 out of 3 Americans weighs more than the other two. Now, that thought really sent me. If it's true for Americans in general, is it also true for the blind? If not, why not? If 1 out of 3 blind Americans doesn't weigh more than the other two, why not? Have we been discriminated against yet again? Either way, there should be a story here, and I'd make it happen. Now, working closely with Barbara Pierce, as I do, and respecting her long years of experience and her extraordinary service, I tried passing the idea to her, you know, the editor giving an assignment. It felt so good. Her reaction went something like this. You know, I don't think I really see a storyline here, but President Maurer appointed you editor, so if there's an article in this, I think you ought to get the credit for it. I thought this was very generous of Mrs. Pierce, though her motive was so very transparent. I mean, she could have taken this idea as her own, utilized its full potential, and left me out completely. But no, she put me first. I could trust her to look out for me, and what a vote of confidence she had given. Still, I felt I needed more guidance. This time, I turned to another friend. I ran this idea past my friend Diane McGeorge, who listened patiently and then said, "Well, Gary, I just don't know." Now, it may be that numbers just aren't my strong suit, never have been. But I just wonder if there's really enough here for an article. Realizing she was trying to mask her excitement and not spoil whatever was to come, I next talked with Mrs. Maurer. You know, I get to the center now and then. She was busy tabulating donated services forms, but she seemed to be flattered that I'd consulted with her. I pitched the story idea, and she didn't take long to think it over. She said, "You know, Gary, I think you should give this some thought because it seems dangerous to me. Now, when you say 1 out of every 3 blind Americans weighs more than the other two, you can just bet 2 out of 3 of your readers are going to think you're talking about them, singling them out, and they're not going to like it very much." I thanked her. I said that I'd be cautious about how I phrased things, and finally I went where I should have gone all along, straight to the boss. He had already gotten wind of my story idea. I think there's a little more than inter-office communication between those two. So when I came to report that I was trying to spread my wings and make the monitor even more interesting, he was ready. "Gary, how long have you been thinking about this number story?" he asked. 4 or 5 days, sir. I said, "I'm finding it elusive. maybe I just need to give it a bit more critical consideration and apply a little more mental machinery to it. What do you think? Missing not a beat, he said, Gary, I think if you've been thinking about this storyline for 4 or 5 days, I'm afraid you've probably given it all the time it deserves. And I'm even more afraid you've already exhausted all of the mental machinery you have. Now, even though the vote was close as to whether or not to run with this story idea, I decided to go another way. For the first issue with my name on it, I decided we would more subtly innovate. So subtle was the change that few noticed. Our innovations included a convention roundup, carrying the presidential report, the banquet speech, and then we focused on awards and other convention speeches. In October, we did a tribute to Ray McGeorge, a feature on the law entitled Sweep and the Bars of Our Prison. And in November, we focused on the fight to bring baby Michaela home and printed part of a brochure entitled Parenting Without Sight, What Attorneys and Social Workers Should Know. People seem to like this just fine, but I can't help but grieve still for the story that never was and perhaps never will be. Maybe it will be the gift I give to our next editor. In truth, I find our monitor's history absolutely fascinating. When I came to the Federation, our magazine was clearly the largest, most talked about, and most controversial publication in the field. When I read those Braille volumes and heard those sound recordings, which captured the words and sounds of conventions I hoped one day to attend, it never occurred to me that the Monitor actually began not as a magazine belonging to the blind speaking for the blind, but as a magazine to print stories for the reading enjoyment of blind people. The magazine was the all-story magazine, and though we don't have a complete set of issues, our best guess is that it started sometime in the early 1930s. Certainly it was around when Dr. Jernigan attended the Tennessee School for the Blind. The all-story ran until July of 1957 and was published by the American Brotherhood for the Blind. As the Federation grew and we made progress in changing the lives of blind people, we decided we cared less about a magazine that would tell us a story and more about creating one that would let us write our own story. The facts we would begin reporting in August of 1957 would chronicle the progress of the blind as we moved from spectator to active participant in the game of life. Other programs and magazines could help us get stories, but only this one could help us spread the message of the Federation and write the story we wanted life to be for people who are blind. When Scott asked me to come and talk about the history of the Monitor, I realized that I only knew a small part of it because I didn't subscribe to the Monitor until 1972. Flashing back to my training as a student, I realized the only way to deliver what Scott wanted was to act like a student and study, study, study. This speech would be my book report, my chance to stand before the class and show how smart I was. If I was invited to stay for lunch, it would be clear my report had gotten a passing grade. Enthusiastically, I scanned the table of contents from every issue beginning in 1957 and coming forward. Went to the internet to get all of the magazines we had already made available online starting in 1987. and then found that our work with the Internet Archive has made available every issue of the Monitor dating back to August of 1957. I downloaded each and every magazine from 1957 to the present and started to read like the wind. Now think just a moment about the absolute absurdity and sheer stupidity of this. In 3 weeks, I was going to give a 20-minute speech, and as preparation, somehow thought I could read most, if not all, of the material that took more than 50 years to compile. Thank goodness I came to my senses, decided what I was trying to do was foolishly impossible, and was overcome by an epiphany. You know, the trouble with an epiphany is that you can't control when it comes. Mine came the day before yesterday. Let me just give you a brief taste of what has been chronicled in the Monitor since 1957. I have to crow a bit about my state having the largest delegation at the 1957 convention in New Orleans. We got to be number one by bringing 40 delegates to the meeting, a far cry from what it takes now to be number one. If you look in the Monitor, produced in April of 1958, you will find an article about a member of the NFB's executive board who had just been appointed to head the Iowa Commission for the Blind. There was faith that young Ken could do some good work there and make the programs espoused by the Federation real. But there were also agencies which were downright gleeful at the prospect of one of these Federation dreamers actually having to work with real blind people in an agency setting. In a later issue, you can read about Dr. Tenbrook's tribute to his mentor and teacher, Newell Perry. Did you know that the reason Jacobus Tenbrook got through school was that when Social Security and rehabilitation could not agree on whether a blind person should have sufficient means to better himself and get an education, Dr. Perry helped to pay Dr. Tenbrook's college expenses? Did you know this battle, the battle for Dr. Tenbrook and many blind people along with him, was a primary reason for the creation of the National Federation of the Blind? The need for a national organization to deal with programs which more and more were coming from the national government? Our magazine tells the story of how at one time in this country, blind people could not buy life or health insurance. The idea of insuring us was considered so foolish that the industry said it was just common sense that no reasonable company would insure this class of people. Through long negotiations, legislation, and changes in regulation, this has changed as a result of our work. And this, too, is captured in our history. A reader of our history will learn about the creation of what is called the Twin Vision Book, which got its start back in 1961. Our reader will find that much of our work in the late 1950s focused on the Kennedy-Baring Bill, and will see that our very right to organize was questioned by the agencies when we became a threat to the way they did business. The confidentiality we all take for granted today came only after our people were publicly persecuted and punished by the agencies whenever they did anything to indicate interest in or support of our organization. As the strength of the Federation grew, the Monitor records how the agencies banded together against us, and in addition to fighting our efforts to organize, created a weapon they would attempt to use against us. That weapon was accreditation, but not the kind you and I think of when we look for good hospitals and universities. This accreditation was being created by the very agencies for which we were demanding change. These regressive agencies would create their own accrediting body and dress it up with a name, a staff, and some fancy letterhead. They would write the standards. They would appoint the teams to review compliance. But more important than their standards or their teams was the fact that they had already decided that the standards and the reviews didn't matter. All they wanted was a shield to use against the National Federation of the Blind. And so the National Accreditation Council for Agencies Serving the Blind and Visually Handicapped, NAC, was created. For years, we fought to expose NAC, both for what it was and, equally important, for what it could never be. Our magazine tells the story of blind sheltered workshop workers seeking our help in going before the National Labor Relations Board, asking to be considered as a part of America's labor force, with all the rights and responsibilities that implies. The Monitor shows how the government at first embraced our arguments and said we were workers, but when challenged by the big money from the shops and the lobbyists they employed, this same government would, less than a decade later, declare we had no rights, were not employees, and simply existed because of the charity of the donors, the managers, and those who contracted for our work. If you didn't give up in despair, but kept reading your Monitor, it would tell you how we lived to fight another day, and how the NLRB would reverse itself once again, and we would fight to organize the shops in working to see that every blind worker would receive at least the minimum wage. Our history shows that when I was 10 years old, our country was still in the middle of a fierce debate about whether blind people were entitled to some form of public assistance, or whether we were to remain the responsibility of our families for our food and our shelter. Think about that. There are familiar names readers of this history will find. Names like Jim Gashel, who headed up the student division in 1970 and thought members should get together once again at the convention. History also records a gentleman named Maurer, who would cut his teeth as a student leader and later emerge in our magazine as a primary writer of articles involving blind people pursuing our rights in the courts. Today, he is a major force in shaping our debates, the challenges we undertake, and orchestrating the events of the day which will become tomorrow's history. The Braille Monitor was around before our Model White Cane laws came to the country state by state, and it is full of reasons why their laws were needed. It was around before there was a Section 503, 504, or 508 in the Federal Rehabilitation Act, and in its pages you can read about how these sections came to be. The Monitor was around before the Americans with Disabilities Act was passed and put forward the concerns of blind people about how problems had to be addressed before the legislation could become the law of the land. Our Monitor describes how we came to tangle with the airlines and how we had to fight to keep our canes when we got on an airplane. Time dictates that I stop before long, so let me tell you about some thoughts I have about the future of the Monitor. I want our Braille Monitor to be true to its tradition of telling the story of blind people. I want it to continue to be the place to share our hopes and dreams, the place we share our successes and the way we achieve them, and the place we expound on our problems and a forum for figuring out how we solve them. The Monitor should be the place where the blind learn about new technology and where we balance our enthusiasm for it with a respect for our old, time-tested attitudes and techniques that are the foundation of being successful as blind people. It should ring out loudly with the words that explain our philosophy and our view of life as blind people, while it continues to reflect the changing world in which we live. Let me close by saying that the Braille Monitor wants and needs you. We want you as a subscriber, whether you want your magazine in Braille, in print, on cassette, or through email. The Monitor wants your contributions as you work day by day to change what it means to be blind. The Monitor is how we share our message. Our message is how we change lives. And the best way to get that message out is to see that people get and read our flagship publication. I thank you for your time, for your commitment to read and learn, and for your commitment to help in carving out and writing about the future of blind people. For, you see, 50 years from now, people will read your words and know they came to enjoy their lives as people ever closer to equal treatment and first class status in America because of what you did. Thank you.